Good afternoon. Thank you for not starting your Thanksgiving break earlier than it's supposed to start. So last time we finished up mentioning this idea that I call page table tricks. The idea that we think of page tables, what they mostly do is give programs the illusion that they own the entire memory by giving them their addresses, which map in some way to real addresses. And our usual idea is that if there's something in the page table which is invalid, that means that you can't access it. It's invalid. But what we can actually do is that the OS doesn't need to crash the program when the processor tells it, hey, this program tried to access something invalid. It can change the page table and rerun that code in such a way that now the mapping is valid. And this can implement lots of features that are common in real OSs, which make memory more powerful, in some sense, than real physical memory can. So I'll start with one simple example, which is talking about space on demand. So when we've drawn pictures of the memory layout of a program, I drew this box for the stack, which represents a lot of memory, because sometimes we like have a recursive function which calls itself recursively thousands of times. Sometimes we allocate a megabyte array and as a local variable and we expect that to work. So sometimes we're going to need thousands of pages of stack. But most programs probably don't actually do that. Like in most programs, you have a few local variables. Often you're using like, you know, maybe 3 pages worth on my laptop, which would be 4 kilobytes each page. So we have this huge amount of wasted space, which standardly we would have to allocate page table entries for and set each of those page table entries to point to a physical page we allocate. But we can do better. We can have the OS use this trick of marking pages as invalid when they're not really invalid to only allocate the space as we need it. So what this means is that we'll be running a program and at some point we'll say push something onto the stack. That's going to mean that we're going to run out of stack space that we have allocated. So we have some page table entries here. This is a segment of our page table. And we have some valid entries, but the next thing on the stack would use this entry. So when we decorate the stack pointer, we're going to be pointing to that virtual page number, which is currently invalid. So that means when the processor tries to execute this push instruction, it's going to trigger a page fault. Because it's going to say, hey, you didn't tell me what this maps to, OS, so you figure it out. And the OS, you know, the standard action we've learned for an invalid mapping is you seg fault the program, you send that nice segmentation fault message if you don't have a signal handler set up, and crash it. But the OS doesn't need to do that. The OS can look up, hey, what did I put at this address? Did I put anything there? Can find out, oh, I want the stack to be here. And it can take action based on that. It can say, okay, so I wanted the stack to be here, but it's currently invalid, so I'm going to fix that. So I'm going to update the page table entry to be valid, and I'm going to choose a physical page for another page of stack for this program that seems to want more than I've already given it. And then I'm going to restart the program and rerun that push instruction. And this time, it's going to look at its page table entry and say, yeah, great. There's something there, I can keep going, and it's going to continue executing. And we can apply this not just to something like the stack, but we can apply this to all sorts of other areas of the program when we're loading it. So when we have our code plus constants here, we can apply the same principle, except we don't start allocating an empty page. We load that part of the file onto the page we allocate. And we can generally use this principle to just load a program by just creating an empty page table for it. We just make a page table, set it all as invalid if we want to, and just deal with it when the processor tells us, hey, the program tried to access this address, fix it. And we can just fix one page table entry at a time, and therefore load the program on demand. So doing it to this extreme seems like maybe not the best idea, because we're spending lots of time calling the OS and loading things. So maybe you want something in between. But this is this sort of idea, maybe not so extreme as setting everything invalid, is a common thing for operating systems to do. So they'll just set up a mostly empty page table, even though some things, aren't ready yet, and they'll handle it if the program accesses it. And this means that, for example, if I run LS and I don't use the sorting routines for an LS or something like that, they can never be loaded if the OS never has a reason to load them. And in addition, when I'm starting a program, it should start up much faster, because I don't have to actually copy a multi-megabyte program to memory to start it. I just need to copy the parts that start running, and I can copy the rest maybe in the background or something like that while it's running. So this is an example of a simple thing that we can do with page tables, which makes memory seem more capable than physical DRAM would be. We can have things loaded on demand rather than having to load the entire thing in memory like we would if we didn't have these page tables at all. And this is a general idea that you'll see used a lot in operating systems, that we'll do something where we'll deliberately have the program, when it's trying to do the normal thing it tries to do, trigger a page or a protection fault. And we just won't assume that's an error. We know that we set it up so the program would trigger that fault, even though that's a perfectly correct thing for the program to have done. Like, access pushing something on the stack when it has more stack space is correct, but we've set up the program so that will trigger a fault. So we'll take the action to make that work. And this is very similar to that trap and emulate idea I discussed for implementing virtual machines, that we're going to have this fault happen on something which should be valid, and we're going to make it work. And when we make it work, we're going to restart the thing which failed. And this means that the page table really is for the hardware, not for the operating system. So the operating system might have a different idea about what memory is allocated to a program, and this may or may not be reflected in the page table. The page table is what the hardware needs to know. So the page table is what the hardware will actually access, and when the hardware will tell the operating system, hey, you made a mistake. Or the program made a mistake, apparently. And the operating system can decide how to act in response to that. But the page table doesn't actually say, is this memory really allocated? It's the OS which decides that based on how it handles a page fault for an invalid page table entry. So this idea of doing something where we fix up the page table and restart the program, we need some hardware assistance to make this practical to do. So one thing most hardware will do, which is not strictly necessary but really, really helpful, is that when there's a fault, it will have a way of telling the operating system, this is the address the program was trying to access. You technically don't need this, because you could read the instruction that ran and figure out what it was supposed to do. Like, you could say it's a push instruction and look at the stack pointer and figure all this out. But the hardware needs to compute the address anyways. Might as well just give it to the operating system. It makes it much easier for the OS to implement its handler. We also need it to be the case that when we have a fault on that push instruction, that the push instruction hasn't had any side effects, nor anything after it. Because when we rerun the push instruction, we don't want to say decrement the stack pointer twice, because we faulted after the first time. We want to have the whole push instruction not have happened before the fault. So one thing the processor is responsible for doing is making sure when it triggers a fault for invalid memory access, it makes sure the whole instruction doesn't happen. This is something known as precise exceptions. So it's as of everything up to the point where the error, the instruction where the error was happened, and nothing afterwards. Even if it might be in the middle of the execution of the instruction that we actually figure out you had an invalid memory access. Like, you might think of some implementations of push where that would be the case. So there's one particular, what I call a page table trick, that our textbook talks about a lot, which is swapping. And this is the idea that because we can get the operating system involved in memory accesses, that we can use disk or SSDs or other slower storage as the next level of our memory hierarchy. And the idea is that whenever we're allocating space for a program, the OS will not allocate space in memory or logical space, it will allocate some space on disk. And DRAM will act as a cache for this space. And the OS is responsible for managing that cache, which it gets a chance to do, because when we access something not in memory, we'll get a page fault, and the OS can act to fill up the cache. So swapping very much looks like using the entire memory as a cache, where the page table is the metadata for this cache. So in this system, what we have as cache blocks in our, like our L1 cache, which store a block of data that really has its home in memory, in the same way, our physical pages are blocks of memory data that really have their home on disk that we store in our cache, our DRAM. And our swap as a cache is fully associative, because each of our physical pages, our blocks, can store data from anywhere in the program's address space. So any virtual address can go to any physical page. So it's fully associative because each physical page can store anything. And it's a bit different in how it's managed. So when we talked about our L1 cache, we talked about all this stuff where we replace things, and all that being managed by the hardware. Here, replacement, when we have a cache miss and need to bring the value in and potentially move another value out, that's going to be managed by the OS. But normal hits, just like in our L1 cache, are going to be managed without the OS. Because this is the common case, you know, when we're doing every single memory access, we don't want to have to call the OS to do it. So we want the normal case is going to be all done in hardware. But the hardware is going to call the OS to do the hard part of how do I bring something into this cache and take it out. And the two things that the OS might do when the hardware calls it by saying, hey, this virtual address doesn't have a physical page assigned to it yet, is one is that it needs to bring that page in from disk. And this is exactly like that allocating on demand idea I told you about earlier, except our allocation is copying it from disk instead of choosing a new empty page or something like that. So the S gets a page fault on some instruction which tried to access something that's currently on disk. It checks where it actually is in some data structure the OS maintains for itself, reads it from disk, adds it to the page table where it read it, and restarts the process. And sometimes, because this is a cache, our disk might be way, way bigger than our memory, and we'll run out of space. And therefore, before we swap in a page, we might need to, what is called, swap out. We might need to bring it from memory back onto disk. And this is in particular in the cases where it's written. So we don't have to do this if it's not written, but this is if it's modified. We need to write it back to disk so we don't forget about it. So we mark it as invalid in the page table and the OS will copy it to disk. And this is something it will do as part of the page fault it gets for swapping in a page. that needs to make space for it. So that's one of the times it will do that. So something which reflects the design of virtual memory in general is this use case, and in particular, the speed of the things involved here. So hard drives and even SSDs are pretty slow. So accessing a hard drive on a modern system is like milliseconds to tens of milliseconds. SSDs are better, but you're still often in the hundreds of microseconds category. And if you remember, we talked about speeds of like caches and memories, accessing main memory is like 50 to 100 nanoseconds. So way, way, way faster. So another thing about hard drives and SSDs is that they're designed to write big things. So they want you to at least write and read kilobytes at a time, generally. And this is actually the reason why way, way, way back, people decided that page tables would have pages which are multiple kilobytes. In fact, this size is probably too small for modern hard drive speeds. But this has been a problem for hard drives forever, that they really want you to read not just bytes at a time, they want you to read lots of stuff together. And that's why we have pages which are pretty big compared to, say, a cache block. So another thing about this slowness is that's gotten worse over the past several years. So it used to be that memories were they were slower than today. And in particular, even though hard drives have gotten faster, they haven't gotten faster as fast as memory has gotten faster. So the gap between the speed of hard drives and memory has been increasing and increasing. And this idea of swapping, which once seemed like an excellent idea, something you might want to do on most of your systems, has become a worse and worse and worse idea. So on a modern system, you don't actually want to be swapping things out to disk and back in most of the time, because the speed difference is now very, very large. So it used to be a couple order of magnitudes less, now it's very large. And this is the main reason I didn't start, like our textbook does, by introducing swapping, because we don't really want to do it today. But it does influence the design of our virtual memory system, because this was the use case they originally had in mind. And there are many features you'll find in processors which are really built with this idea of swapping in mind. So with that, let's look at what swapping ends up looking like. So here we have two programs that are relevant, which have their own page tables. I haven't shown you what they map to, but there's two pages which will be relevant to this example. So we have one page in program A, which is stored on disk, and we have a page table entry for it, which is marked as invalid. There's no copy of it in physical memory right now. And there's a page in program B, which is stored in memory and is valid in its page table. And so program A gets to run for a while, and eventually it tries to access this invalid page. That's going to trigger a page fault. And the OS is going to respond to that page fault, and it's going to need to make some decisions. So it knows that I need to read this thing from disk and put it somewhere in memory. So first, it needs to choose where do I put that. So it needs to choose a page to replace. And in this example, the OS, for some reason, chooses this page that program B had allocated. So in order to make space for it, it needs to evict that page. And hopefully there's already a copy on disk that's up to date. If not, it would have to write it out to disk. And when it evicts it, it's going to mark it as invalid in program B's page table. So now if program B tries to access that again, which we hope, we've chosen program B so that won't happen soon, it will get an error, a fault, and the OS can handle that by loading back the page and making the page table entry valid again. So then the OS gets to tell the disk to start reading this page, this green page, into memory. And that's going to actually take a while. So it's going to tell the disk, please start reading, I've allocated space for you, put it here, and tell me when you're done. And as I said, that takes milliseconds to tens of milliseconds. And we could just have the OS keep spinning, waiting for that to happen, but that's actually a long enough time that we can probably just run another program for a pretty useful amount of time in that space. And that's what an operating system typically will do. While we're loading that data for this page fault, we'll run another program until the disk comes back and tells the operating system, hey, I'm done. And the mechanism we have to do that is an interrupt. So we'll get an interrupt saying the disk read is finished, the one you asked for. Now that page contains the data you want, that physical page. So the OS gets to run and it can switch back to program A. And now program A will restart at that same exact instruction which tried to read that previously invalid page table entry, and now it's going to read it again. It's valid, the memory access is going to work, and the program is going to continue. And to the program, program A, it looks like just that it had a very slow move instruction. Questions about this picture? So this is what happens in swapping, and we're acting as a cache. And we have some decisions about how we design this cache that we haven't talked about yet that we still need to make. And these are partly up to the operating system. So one decision is our write policy. And I've alluded that we only swap out the page, let's write it back out, if it's modified. So I've told you what our write policy is. That is, it's write back. And there's a reason for this. Implementing write-through is pretty hard and would be slow. So the mechanism we have doesn't make it easy to implement write-through. When we set a page as, say, not writable, we get a fault, but the write hasn't happened yet. We'd have to do a bunch of work to figure out what value is being written and to emulate the rest of the instruction. Technically, we could do this, but the hardware really doesn't actually support it. And it doesn't support it because if we could do it, it would be slow. These hard drives and solid state disks are not designed to handle writes like we do to memory. They aren't designed for us to say, here's 8 bytes, change it. They're designed to say, here's like several kilobytes, change it. So it's not actually an efficient way to use this medium. So we're not gonna do these piecemeal writes like our program does to DRAM. So we're gonna do write back. And if you remember when we talked about like our L1 cache, if we wanted to implement write back, we needed some extra information because we don't always want to write things out that haven't changed. And that's often been the case that something hasn't changed. So we're going to have a dirty bit indicating was this page modified? And typically we're going to keep this in the page table entries themselves. So along with the physical address, we're going to have a dirty bit saying, did you use this page table entry to write this physical page? And there's two ways we can maintain that. So the most common is that because the hardware is designed with us implementing something like swapping in mind, we're going to have the hardware manage that for us. It's going to set the dirty bit entry in the page table on write. So this means that another step of that MMU's address translation is going to say, is the dirty bit set already if we're doing a write? If not, let's write back a different page table entry with the dirty bit set. Another option, if you didn't have that hardware support, it's not actually hard to implement. You just set the page as read-only. You get a fault and you figure out, oh, it's because it's read-only. And you mark it as dirty and then set it as writable. But most commonly, the hardware actually helps you with this by implementing it itself because swapping is the first real use case for virtual memory. Another decision is the replacement policy. And the replacement policy here matters considerably more than it does in our sort of L1 cache case. And this is because the cost of a miss is huge. It's really, really bad if we're having lots of misses in our memory as a cache for disk, because we have milliseconds per miss. So we want to implement a replacement policy which minimizes that. And unlike our L1 cache, our replacement policy is implemented entirely in software. So we can actually do things which are considerably more complicated than you'd want to do in a hardware L1 or L2 or even L3 cache, because you have more flexibility to code up whatever you want. You can also spend more time because, hey, if a miss costs a couple milliseconds, what's 100 microseconds to figure out the replacement policy? You know, if you can improve the miss rate by doing that, it's worth it. And just like with caches, our typical ideal for a replacement policy is going to be something like LRU, least recently used, because we think that most programs have natural locality, and that locality means that, you know, if they have good locality, that LRU is the best policy. No, it's not always the case. It depends on what the program actually does, but it's a good place to start and what we'd like to do. So can we actually implement that? The answer, just like for most caches, is not really. So in the simple cases, like if we had two physical pages, yeah, we could do it. But otherwise, not really, because the OS is going to need to know what's the least recently used page, the second least recently used, third recently used, when it has to replace multiple pages in a row. And something would need to keep track of the order and update it on every read or write. And the hardware is not going to do this for us. It would be very complicated to make hardware which keeps this list in order for all the many, many physical pages we have. We could do it in software because we can sort of intercept reads by making the page invalid and getting a fault, but that would mean that we're running like an extra 1,000 instructions every time you access memory, which would also be completely unacceptable. So just like we did with caches, we're going to approximate LRU. We're going to do something which isn't actually least recently used, but is close enough. So one idea is that what we really care about with least recently used is that we don't want to replace something that was used recently. So we're going to do not recently used. And one way you can implement this is that the OS can just periodically mark everything as invalid. Then it's going to get some page faults. Whenever you try to access something, it's going to get a page fault. It's going to find out, oh, I already loaded this. I just marked it as invalid to see when you access things. So then it marks it as valid again and puts that page on a list of used pages. Then later on, it gets a page fault for a page which is not loaded yet, and it needs to make a replacement decision. And it just chooses something which isn't on the use list. That's going to be a lot better than just choosing randomly, for example. And you can imagine extensions of this where you not just choose something not on the use list, you choose something that hasn't been on the use list like the last 5 times. And this sort of idea of sampling when pages are accessed is basically how operating systems implement their replacement policy. So they aren't getting a full list of when everything is accessed every time, but they get some idea of what things are accessed recently. And just like for our write-back policy, there's actually going to be some hardware assistance to help the OS implement this strategy. So here I'm saying we just mark everything as invalid, and that's going to deal with our need to be notified when things are accessed. Hardware often implements an access bit in the page table entry. So this is something which is going to be set to 1 if it's not already set whenever a page is accessed. So instead of marking all the pages as invalid and in a page fault handler saying, did I mark this as invalid just to see if it was accessed, we can just clear this access bit and check later on, did the hardware set it again? And if so, it was accessed. And this is maintained similarly to the dirty bit. And the OS can use this to implement that same sort of list of used pages strategy. So these access and dirty bits are these extra things in our page table entry to help implement these, not just straight address translation, but to help the OS implement these things where memory looks more capable than it physically really is. And these are kept in the page table entries but they're really information about the underlying physical page. So note that unlike our caches, where we have one cache block with one tag and all that, we can have page table entries in multiple places that refer to the same physical page. In this case, there's separate like access to dirty and valid bits and for all of them. And the OS needs to deal with that itself. So this is going to be dealt with in software that if I have two programs that share a library and I want to know is that library recently accessed, I better check both of their page tables. And OSs are going to do that. That's going to be part of managing that list of used pages to make a replacement decision. So before I move on to other things we can do with page tables and the OS, any questions, points of confusion about swapping? Okay, so not yet. Okay. So swapping, as you can see, has lots of infrastructure and was this trick that virtual memory was designed for. There's some other things that OSs commonly do besides just loading things on demand, which are probably more frequently actually used than swapping on modern OSs. So one of these is mapping a file to memory. So on Linux and Unix, there's a system call called mmap. There's usually an equivalent on pretty much any OS you'll actually use. And what this does is it makes it appear that a file on disk is part of your memory. You can read the file like it's an array. So it's like it's read into your memory. You can write the file like it's an array, and your changes will go to the file on disk. Your changes will be visible immediately if someone reads the file. So it's just like it's part of your memory, but it's actually a file that's in the file system and conceptually on disk. And this is a feature that an OS can basically implement for free if they have swapping. The mechanisms you want to implement it are exactly the same. When we read from that array, you want to load the thing from disk in the file. When we write to it, you want to note the changes and eventually write them back to the file with something like a dirty bit. And this is all the mechanisms we needed for swapping. Just now they're giving us this funny way of accessing files, which maybe is more convenient. And there's this little extra detail that we just need to be careful that when any other program or the OS tries to access the file, we just use the same physical pages. That's sort of all we have to do. It's basically free. And because of this, pretty much every mainstream OS out there implements this feature. Because they have swapping, they might as well have memory mapped files. So another sort of trick that we could do with page tables is fast copies. Well, kind of fast. So there's a section of our book we skipped over which talks about how process creation and such works in Unix. And Unix made this crazy looking decision. When you want to start a new process, you use a system call which creates a copy of your entire program. So in your shell, when you run ls, what it does is it creates a copy of the entire shell. Then that copy immediately makes a system call saying, get rid of everything I have in memory and replace it with a copy of ls. This seems very wasteful. Why are we making a copy of our entire shell just to get rid of it for this whole new program? And this seems like it should be really slow. And it's not very fast, but it's way faster than you'd expect. And this is because there's a thing we can do with page tables to make this much more efficient than it seems like it should be. So it seems like if our shell has like a megabyte of memory allocated, for some reason, probably shouldn't, that we'd have to copy a megabyte of stuff. But that's not actually the case. And the key idea is that, so line this, is that if we have two copies of Bash, they can share their code for free. That's easy. What about the other guy? So what we can do for that is that we can share it as long as we're not writing it. If we have some global variables, as long as they don't change, they can be shared. So the idea is that since sharing writable data is fine between these two copies, as long as they're not changed, we'll take advantage of this. We'll just detect modifications, and only at that point will we actually make them have different copies of the data. So what we do is we say, this part of the page table, which is shared, is read-only. It's not really read-only, but we're telling the processor, don't let the program write it, let me act first. And the OS is going to get notified, hey, it was trying to write this thing. You should deal with it. And instead of dealing with it by saying, hey, this program did something it wasn't supposed to do, we're going to fix up the page table entry. So what our copy procedure is going to look like is we're going to have some page table with some allocated writable pages, say where our shell's global variables are. So our shell calls fork, and we're going to make a copy of its memory, but we're not actually going to copy anything but the page table. So we're just going to make a copy of the page table, and we're going to mark everything as read-only. And that's okay, because these two copies, they're always going to look the same, because we can't change them. So we're going to share all the physical pages. So all we had to copy was the page table, which is much smaller than our program's memory. So at some point, one of the two copies of the program is going to try to change one of its global variables. And we've just marked that as read-only. So at that point, the processor is going to look at the page table entry. It's going to say, oh, it's not writable. Hey, operating system, what do you want to do about this? And what the OS is going to do is it's going to take this opportunity to actually copy that page, to make a copy of that physical page that's exclusive to this program, and update the page table entry to point to it. And then it can rerun the write instruction, and now it will work. It points to a writable page. And by doing this, all we have to copy are the things which are actually modified. So in the case I talked about where we make a copy of our shell and then immediately, you know, maybe after a little bit of work, replace it with something else, there's not going to be very much which changes. So even if we have lots of global variables, most of them don't change, we don't copy very much. And it's way, way faster than if we actually had to copy many kilobytes of the program's memory. So any questions about page table tricks, things that our operating system can do by reacting to page faults in general? Okay. So I'm going to move on to talk about our second topic for today, which is dealing with this problem we talked about last time. So looked at my laptop, and I have a big address space. And we talked about page tables as just being these arrays of page table entries. And based on that, with 8-byte page table entries, which is what my laptop has, and 48-bit virtual addresses, as I mentioned, those 64 bits in the address, but the processor doesn't use 16 of them. But even after that, you know, with the organization we talked about, it looks like we need 0.5 terabyte of page tables. And well, I don't have 0.5 terabyte of RAM in my laptop. So clearly I'm not actually doing that. So what are we actually doing? How can we actually deal with this? So we want to not store a page table entry for every page. So we need some way of saving space. And the key observation we're going to use to save space is that in a typical program, most pages are invalid. We have these big regions, say between our stack and our heap, where we don't have any valid addresses. And we'd like those addresses to not require us to spend space in our page table. They're pretty boring. They're all the same. We'd like to not store a page table entry for every single one of those. So we're going to use a data structure other than a flat array where we don't have to represent most of those invalid HTML entries. So this is a map. We're going to look up a virtual page number, and we're going to get a page table entry. And if we don't get anything, then we're going to say it's invalid. And we have lots of options for doing this. And what most people would say, if I asked you like in the first week of this course, before you did the reading, say, well, you want that sort of map, why don't you use a hash table? And that is a real option, and it actually has been used by real processors. But it's not actually the dominant choice. So instead, we're going to use a variant of the other data structure you would probably answer as, how do I store this map, which is something tree-based. So we're going to use some sort of tree data structure. We're not going to use your traditional search tree. And there's reasons for this. If we think about what things we want to be true of how we do our page table lookups. So one thing is that our lookup is going to be implemented in hardware. So we want our lookup to be really simple. We don't want to do tons and tons of comparisons. We don't want to have to do any fancy calculations. Just to make the hardware simple and relatively easy to implement. We also don't want the lookup to involve tons of memory accesses. So if you think about using, say, a binary search tree, you know, if we have a 48-bit address space, you're ending up with, well, I guess it depends how much it's used, but you're ending up with like 10 or 20 memory accesses. That's not something you want to do. You want to have a pretty low number of memory accesses. So we're going to use a tree-based scheme, which happens to be reasonably nice as far as being easy to implement in hardware, not a lot of calculations or comparisons to do, and not requiring us to do lots and lots of memory accesses and implement all the logic to keep track of where are we and so on in the hardware. So I'm going to show you a two-level version. As you saw the preview of in the textbook, there's more levels in a real system, but we'll start with two levels since it's the easiest version of this tree data structure to explain. So here we have 64K pages, 64K total pages, so a 16-bit virtual page number. And I'm going to implement this by having a top-level table with 256 entries. Each entry represents an range of 256 pages. So let's if I say, want to look up the page for virtual address 302 hex, I'm going to first look in the first level table for the in the fourth entry, because that's what corresponds to the range. Which I did not write correctly, but corresponds to the range that includes 302. So I'm going to look in there, and I'm going to find the page table, which for the range from 300 to 3FF, I'm going to look at the third entry, because that's where 302's page table entry is. And we have regions of our top level table which don't have any valid pages under them, and we don't need to have a second label table for those. We'll just mark in the first level table they're wrong. If you try to access this, just trigger a page fault. Don't keep going. So our first level table is just going to look very much like a normal page table that we've seen before, a normal flat page table. The only difference is that each page table entry doesn't correspond to a single virtual page number, but a range of them. And we have a physical page number. It's not the physical page number where the program's data is actually stored. It's the physical page number which is where we store the next page table to look at. But otherwise, it's the same. And you may notice that when I did this division, I chose 256 entries in each of the tables. I chose a power of 2, and that was deliberate, because that means I can just look at part of these addresses, and I can figure out which entry of this first level table do I want. And that's going to be really easy to do in hardware. We just take some bits of the address, use that to figure out what index in the table, just like we did with our one level table. So when I'm accessing address 302, I know I look at the 3 part of the address, I know I go to this fourth row here, and I know that the next thing I want to do is look at the next page table, which is located on this physical page number. And our second level table looks exactly the same as our flat tables we were using before, except they don't start at page number 0. In this case, because this was pointed to for the entry for 300 and on, it starts at page number 300. And in particular, the index into this table, based on our virtual page number, is the bottom bit, so the virtual page number. That's going to be easy for the hardware to figure out. There's no division, nothing like that. We just take some bits of our address. And that tells us which entry to look in. And since this is the last level of the page table, we have our physical page numbers here, which are actually where the data is. So the overall lookup procedure that we're going to implement is we have our virtual address, like we did before. It has a virtual page number, but now we're going to split it into parts, one for each level. And we're going to take the parts in order, going from the beginning of the address to the end. So we take the first part, we multiply it times what our page table entry size is, which is bit shifting because we choose a power of 2 to make this easy to implement in hardware. And we add our page table base register. Now our page table base register doesn't point to the whole page table, it points to the first level. And then we get the address of the page table entry in the first level. We read that, we split it up into parts, we check the valid bits, and maybe cause a fault. And previously, we'd be done here. We'd get the physical page number out of this and just put it in the address. But that's not going to work anymore, because we have another level to look at. So we're going to take that physical page number, we're going to use that as a base address for the second level table, and we're going to add the offset based on the second part of the virtual address. So we take that second part of the virtual address, add it to that base address, and we get the address of the second page table entry for this lookup. And we read that from memory, we split it into parts, and we get our physical page number, which is going to be top of the address, just like it was in our single level lookup. And we also need to check the bits in the page table entry to see is this page valid and so on. And just as before, we have the page offset, the location within the virtual and physical page that we just copy over from our original program address to our physical address. And so, from a performance perspective, the big change we made is previously we needed to access a page table entry and then the actual thing the program wanted. Now we're accessing a page table entry, then based on that, another page table entry, then the actual thing the program accessed. So we have, basically 2 page table lookups, which look pretty much like the ones we had for a single level table by themselves. And together, this is what the MMU actually is doing. So it's doing these lookups on our typical system, figuring out if there's faults, and giving us our physical address out. Questions on this procedure? Straightforward enough. And another way you might view this, sort of a more abstract view, is that we take our page table base register, combine it with the first part of the virtual address to get a page table entry, which points to our second level page table base, combined with the second part of the address, and so on. So that's our general multi-level page table idea. So I showed it to you with 2 levels. We might need more levels if we have a bigger virtual address, but I like having space in my slides, so didn't draw that out. The basic idea is we're going to split our VPN into pieces, one for each level of table. At the top levels, we do our page table lookup, but instead of getting the actual physical page to look at the end, we get the physical page for the next page table. The bottom level, we get the physical page for the actual address the program is trying to access. And we do our validity checks at each level. And a small note about this. So our textbook has some pictures where they label things VPN1 and VPN2 when they're splitting up an address. And this has led people to think, oh, that means that there's two virtual page numbers in an address. There is not. The whole thing that's not the page offset in a virtual address is the virtual page number. We're splitting it up into pieces. The textbook should label those as just VPN part one, part two. So now that we know how this works, let's try a little exercise. So on 32-bit x86, typical configuration would have a 32-bit physical address and a 32-bit virtual address, and 4 kilobyte pages. And this is implemented with two levels of page tables, where each page table is going to take up exactly one page. It happens to be convenient because you can allocate pages for programs or page tables. And this one page worth of page table is going to have 4 byte page table entries. So given this, how are we going to let's figure out how this address is split up. So if you bit to think about it, you can check with your neighbor if you're not sitting alone in a corner. So one wants to tell me how I should start doing this. What's a good first thing to figure out? Yeah. So we have to find the page offset. Okay. So how do we remove the page offset?
So find the last 12 bits of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, which is 6, 7, 8.
Okay. So we want to figure out that this is the offset, and we knew it was this is 12 bits. And we knew it was 12 bits because of the page size. Page offset, we have a unique offset for every single byte on the page. There's 2 to the 12 of them, so 12 bits to do that. So this is the page offset. And that means that the rest is the whole virtual page number. And that's somehow going to be split up into two parts. So what's the good next step then for figuring out how that's split up into two parts? Preferably someone who hasn't. Anything we want to know to do that, regardless of whether you know how to figure it out. Preferably someone who hasn't answered. Well, okay. Okay, so you're saying, I know that both of the levels of page tables are the same size, and I'm going to assume that we're using all the bits there, so they're just divided evenly between the two. Since they're the same size, we use the same number of bits from the address to do that. So that's one thing you could do. So you could say, yep, it must These remaining bits, which there are 20 of, must be split up evenly. Another way you can figure this out is you can say, how many entries are in a page table? And you'd say, okay, there's 4-byte page table entries. Each thing is one page, which is 2 to the 12 bytes. So we can divide 2 to the 12 by 4, and we find out that there's 2 to the 10 entries per page table. And if there's 2 to the 10 entries, we need 10 bits to figure out which of those 2 to the 10 we're referring to. So each part is 10. So each part of the virtual page number is 10 bits. Happily, 2 times 10 is 20. So there's not anything where somehow we're not using all of the page table here, which is convenient because it seemed to be a bad question if I didn't mention something about that. So the overall result we get is that the first part is we just write out the address, the first bits of the address, and split it up into 2 10-bit pieces. So our first part is hex 48. That's what we're going to use to look up the first level. Second part is hex 345. That's what we're going to use to look up in the second level. And the offset is 678. That's what we're going to use after we got the second level and we have the actual physical page number, how we find out where in that physical page we went to access. Questions, comments about this procedure? Yeah.
So is the trick that you did where you kind of split it up in half, is it just haphazardly correct in this situation with that issue in all cases, or would we usually just do that?
So the question is, the trick where I said, oh, his observation was they're the same size, so you must be able to split it up in half. So as long as we assume we're using all the page table entries, that's valid. So it might not be the case that we have a setup where we use all the entries. Presumably, I wouldn't say that the page table is one page if that were the case, though. It'd have to be a different size because we're not using all of that space. So this is splitting up the address, which is the first part of actually doing that memory access procedure I showed you. So we're going to run through an example of what that looks like, and I'm going to start with what we did last time, you know, our one level page table lookup, and we're going to expand this to 2 levels. So last time we did something where I gave you a page table and a physical memory and asked you what is this value, virtual address there. This is a bit different. Here, I've just given you a physical memory and I told you the page table base register is set to a particular value. I've given you the format of our, in this case, 1-byte page table entries. So we said that the most significant bits are the physical page number, followed by a valid bit, followed by 4 other bits, which hopefully don't matter. And so to do this lookup, what we're going to take our virtual address, and we're first going to need to split it up into those pieces. So we have one piece, which is our virtual page number. Since this is a single level case, we're just going to take that whole thing besides the page offset, which is 3 bits because we have 8-byte pages, is going to be our virtual page number. So we take that virtual page number, which is 6, multiply it times the page table entry size, which is 1, add it to the base address, and we get the address of our first page table entry, which is D6. And we need to look up what's the format of a page table entry to actually decode that. And when we do that, we find out, okay, this is PPN 110, and the valid bit is 1. So it's valid, so we're actually going to access memory. So we're accessing memory at address 0x30. And we're going to get BA. So this should be reviewed from last time. Any questions? Fusion. So we're going to extend this to have a 2-level page table. And our difference is we're going to make the virtual addresses bigger. So instead of having just a 3-bit virtual page number, we're going to have a 6-bit virtual page number and therefore a 9-bit virtual address. And we're going to divide that 6-bit virtual page number into 2 3-bit pieces. So in this case, I'm translating the address 131. So the first 3-bit piece has 100. So I take my page table base register, add 4, get address 24, and that's D4 is our page table entry. I decode that again, I get physical page number 110, but this time that's not the physical page number where the program's data actually is, that's where the next page table is. And I find out it's valid, so I can keep going. So I use that to form my next page table address. So this is the base address of my second level page table, which I got from that physical page number, and just adding an appropriate number of zeros to make it the beginning of a page. And I add the next part of my address here, the next part of the virtual page number, to form my next page table entry address. And I read that, and that's OXDB. And I can decode that again as a page table entry, and I get the same old physical page number, and I use that physical page number combined with my page offset here to figure out what memory address to access, and I find out that we're accessing memory at address 31 physical, which is OA, and that's going to be the result of the memory access. So questions on any step of this? Okay. So given that, we should be able to do a different example, which might not have the same physical page number appear every time. You're allowed to talk with each other. Testing. My first step would be to write it out as bits. Remembering it's 9 bits, so you don't need all the leading zeros and probably don't want them. Okay, so who thinks they at least have the first page table entry which is accessed? Iffy. So maybe for some people, and who thinks they aren't that far? Okay, so the first thing we want to find out is what's the part of the virtual page number we want to use first. So to do that, we want to know that we have 8-byte pages, and page tables are one page. That's what's told to us in this problem here. So 8-byte page tables at each level are one page, and page table entries are 1 byte, so we have 8 entries per page table, which means we need 3 bits to figure out where we go in each level of the page table. So the first 3 bits are what we're going to use for the first level of the lookup. So we just take the first 3 bits of our address here, so these 3 bits here, that's going to be what we're going to use to look up. And with that, we know that we have a base register at address 8. So we're going to take 8, we're going to add the number of page table entries that specify, so our virtual page part is 3. So we're going to add 3 to 8, 3 times the page table entry size, which is 1, so 3 to 8. And that's how we're going to get the first page table entry we access. So 0, 1, 2, 3. And we get that byte of memory is our page table entry for the first level. And we're going to repeat this procedure again, give you some time, for the second level, where we have the next 3 bits are what we need for the second level of the page table. We're going to, instead of using the base register, we're going to use the physical page number we get from that first page table entry. Okay, so I'll run through what I hopefully is a correct solution written down on the slide. So as I said, we get our first page table entry is here. And that we get because we extract 3 as the first part of the virtual page number, add it to the base register, which is 8. We don't need to multiply by anything because page table entries happen to be 1 byte in this example. We would if they weren't. We find out that this is our first page table entry. We decode this using this format here into a physical page number and a valid bit. And we find out that the physical page number is 5, 101, and the valid bit is 1. So it's valid, so we can keep going. If it wasn't valid, we couldn't. We just find out it's a page fault. And we know that since the physical page number is 5, that's where the next page table is. So page number 5, 101, if we multiply that times 2, times 8, we got the address, times 8 because we have 8 byte pages. And we find out that this is our second level page table. So that's our second level page table, and we're going to use the next 3 bits of the address that we haven't used to figure out which page table entry in there we're accessing. So we have 8 page table entries, each of which is 1 byte in this case, and the number, and that's the second 3 bits of the address, is going to tell us which of those entries to access, and what we actually get is those 3 bits are 111 or 7, so we need to go to the thing with index 7, so we have 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and this is our second page table entry. And since this is the last level of the page table, so we have 2 level page tables, and the rest of our address is a page offset, the physical page number here is where the program is actually trying to access. So we look at that page table entry, and we find out it has physical page number 111, or 7, and it has the valid bit is 1, so it's valid, so we can keep going, we don't have to trigger a fault, and we take physical page number 7, multiply it times 8 to get the base address of the page, and then add in our page offset. And our page offset is these last 3 bits, 3 bits because our pages are 8 bytes, the address. So we take that with our physical page number, and that's the address we're accessing, which is 0x3b. So we're accessing this byte here. And that's the result of the memory access. So any questions about anything I did here? So next time we'll continue with a couple more examples in this vein, and we'll talk about how we make our page table lookups actually fast, because now we're saying we're doing like 2, 3, 4 memory accesses. So we're going to do more caching to make it fast, and we'll talk about how that works next week. Thank you for coming, despite apparently the break starting early for many people.